I don't know if we're on or not. Yeah, we are. Red thing. Morning, everyone. Today is Tuesday, September 18, 2018. It is 9 a.m., and we're assembled in the general discussion, to have general discussion in the Board of County Commissioners Conference Room. President Commissioner Hare and Commissioner DeYoung. And first item up is Board of Commissioners Office part-time position.
And I think JJ requested this to be on the agenda. It's the idea of transitioning from what the board had as one FTE to 2.5 FTEs. I think we're all aware of this. It's budget neutral or less than what a full-time FTE would be.
Yeah, come up, Arthur, and just kind of give us the financial lowdown of it. That'd be great.
Well, I'm not sure the full context of everything going on, but the question was,
I don't know what's going on here, but
I want these used chairs to see how good they are. So the
you break it, you bought it.
The options in available. What I meant to say, I don't know if you folks have discussed this before, but if you're talking about in the budget, you have 2.5 FTE. If you're talking about whether that half-time FTE can be split into two separate positions that both equal a half-time FTE, that's yes, you can do that.
I don't think we're asking that question. I think we know the answer to that. I think the HR manager wanted to make sure that the full board was aware that this was the plan, the trajectory, the office. And I think it works in conjunction with the expectation that we're going to move quite expeditiously a full-time staffer in the office to part-time and doing part-time emergency outreach.
Which is within your full scope of authority since both programs are under the board.
Well,
and
sure,
so you can assign whatever work you want to existing personnel.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, when it was bounced off of me, I thought it was a pretty good idea because it also gives us three people. If one's on vacation, we've always got somebody else that'll come in, you know, and fill in. It gives you that.
Right.
I was just concerned. I haven't met any of these people, but it's just I think it's something we need to do. I
go ahead and fill that halftime position.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
fill that halftime position.
Fine.
We were looking to do that anyway, and I guess the interviewed people were comfortable with that reworking schedule. So I have no problem with it myself.
Great.
That sounds good.
Okay. Thank you.
I thought it was smart.
And you thought it was funny?
Smart.
Smart. Yeah, that's a good word to put for it. Item two, facility service quarterly update. Ryan Johnson. Step up and try out the new chair.
I will. Load test it.
We'd like you to shift to another one because Arthur used that one. We want the same mileage on all chairs.
Well, we've had them for a few weeks now.
Have you?
Yeah.
No,
they're Herman Miller style, which is really that highest echelon of office furniture. It's what my chair is. I bought it on Craigslist back in 2012 when I moved it.
This is more comfortable than my desk chair.
They are.
Get any ideas?
Yeah. Nice.
I have a key.
Lock the conference room after this.
Don't lock Ryan out.
So what do you have for us, Ryan?
Oh, I got a few different items. I'm not sure which one to touch on first, but I thought I would start with the community development and the transient issues we're having over there. My thought is, I mean, we've got several proposals for different fencing to try to fence off the area. In the past, they seem to just migrate across the street and they camp out at public health or down in the bushes by facilities. So my thought, rather than spending the money on fencing, would be add it to concierge rounds, and they could do several nightly patrols, checking in, make sure the area is clear, and then it covers the whole campus.
I would have some concern with one concierge guy going up against the half a dozen. I don't know how many people sleep in there, but I was up there one day, and Nora said, you need to look at this, and went up in those little pockets on the upstairs deals. And my gosh, it smells way worse than an outhouse.
Yeah,
I mean, they're doing know, they're doing everything in there and just sleeping in it. And that's just...
Yeah, and we've kind of went in phases where we work with the PD and they keep them out of there, and then they got to focus somewhere else, and then they migrate back in. And it's just kind of a vicious circle. What? Then they come across the street at public health. So that's the main reason that the fencing doesn't really appeal to me, is because they just go some other property that we own.
But by the same token, if you put concierge on it and they kick them out of there, they're going to go somewhere else anyway, correct?
Yeah, except they'll at least be patrolling the whole area.
Okay.
It's not concierge on foot. They'll be in a patrol car after hours, and I don't know if they have one or two, and they have the ability to call for backup as well.
So were you looking to do, and when you were talking about fencing, because we talked about this months ago, so it's kind of one of those things. I thought we were putting fences up to keep those alcoves, or did we say no because it would be ugly? I don't know what the outcome was. I know we talked about it.
I don't know if we ever got price back on it.
Yeah, I never had any direction on one way or the other that anyone wanted to go. We looked at different options.
We reached out to City Patrol.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was effective the first time at deterring them. But, you know, like Ryan said, they go someplace else, or that isn't the problem, so they think that that's done. But I think we're going to keep revisiting this issue until we do something structurally.
I think you agree.
And at the same time, that is not going to solve it either, because these people are pretty committed to being in that area. And so they're going to cut the wire. They're going to do whatever it takes.
They cut holes in the Dimmick fence right now. We just call it, you know, a new zipper, and it's pretty regular. Once a month, we got to relace the fence because they cut a hole in it, come in, and find a place to camp out. We don't really call them transients anymore. We call them urban campers because they're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So, Ryan, I guess for my opinion is we need to do both, the fences and the patrol. And the reason why is because the patrol's not there every minute of every hour. And at what point do they get there enough to relieve themselves that has it dripping in somebody's office, and then they get moved along? It's without the fence to keep them away from the wall, they're still not going to be solving the issue of somebody coming in and putting their hand in urine. And that's unacceptable.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
I mean, is there something it's sealed a wall with that it's not getting in as
we
well?
We sealed the wall, and supposedly it was sealed prior to that, but a section got missed, and sure enough, that's where it went right down and entered the building. Very unsanitary, not something we want to have. The trick is the way they're designed with the half wall is to not make it look like a birdcage. I mean, if cosmetics or how it looks is not an issue, we can put chain link up there.
It isn't.
We can throw chain link in there with some gates. Just, you know, probably $3,000-$4,000 to fence it. If we want to go with something that looks nice, you're probably in the $7,000-$8,000 range.
I'm not caring about nice. I'm caring about keeping people from having bathrooms in there.
You can't really see it from the road, so
no, you can't see it from Dimmick or any of that. So it's on the backside. That building will eventually probably be repurposed into something else. If not,
it'll be torn down.
It'll be torn down. So, you know, cosmetics. I'm not too worried about it. I think just as secure as we can make that, and if they move somewhere else, then we're gonna attack somewhere else until they move on.
Okay. Would you want to include the security service as well? Do both?
I think to start out with, I would. I think I'd try that for a couple of months and do both.
That was kind of my thought, is at least get them started for a couple of months and maybe shift them, see how it goes, and then we can always pull that back, and we could do the fencing as well.
At some point in time, we're going to have to probably... Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and when I was across the parking lot over there, I called Coeur d'Alene. I said, you have a problem with homeless. What did you do with them? Because we had our problem in our downtown corridor. And they said, oh, we still have the homeless. We just gave them a place that they can be. And it's outside of town. And they took some acreage out there and said, there's your homeless camp. I don't know where you would do that around here. But right now, the homeless camp seems to be Devil's Slide up there, that shaved off portion of the railroad tracks up there.
Right.
I guess maybe Larry Whitmire and I should go squirrel hunting up there again like we used to when we were kids.
Yeah.
But that, I don't know that's really an issue, but Coeur d'Alene said we got them out of our downtown by moving them off, and that's kind of where that kind of sparked the moving of the soup kitchen down there to a mobile soup kitchen, having it at different locations instead of downtown, because they were walking from the hobo camps right straight through their central business district to get lunch and then harassing everybody on the way back because they're coming.
I think I have an idea, but I think you and I need to go up there and take a look at it.
Okay. Yeah. And we do have the problem on all our properties. It's not just there.
Right, right.
Fairgrounds is an issue. Mm-hmm. All our parking lots. We have people sleep in them every night.
Yeah, I think this is probably the extreme where it led to.
Well, the health issue is what the health
issue. So let's just, you and I will take a look at it today. We can do it right after this meeting, and then we'll go from there.
Ryan, did our generator kick in yet?
So,
yes, it did.
Let's move on.
Yes, thank you, Ryan.
That's my guys.
Is there something you need to go check on, or are you okay?
No, I'm okay. They're installing new doors up in Quartz and doing some cutting, and the fire alarm was supposed to be in walk test, so it didn't trip. And it sounds like it wasn't. So.
Anyway. Did the fire alarm trigger power as well?
No.
It should shut off the fan, shouldn't it?
Looks like we have multiple.
We lost the maintenance guy if he's cut into the one of those.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a story about Hillcrest Fire Station.
That's
not giving up.
I installed a couple of heaters at Hillcrest Fire Station years ago to cut the flues up through the roof. Cut through the roof. So we cut through the roof and did it like a jack-o'-lantern so you can lift it out. Lifted it out, and here's two conduits like this with about, I don't know how many pairs of wires in it. Cut right through there with a sawzall.
Yeah.
Never even felt it, and it was all the door operators.
Oh, no.
There was no way to get the
they
doors
don't need
open.
To get
if
out.
You had a fire, right. You're done. Yeah. You can't get those doors open. You're not going to lift them up. There's no chain. I went, I need an electrician. I need one here now. And a whole bunch of alligator clips. And we got the doors open. We just wired a wire and got the doors open and left them open until we could wire around it. But who in the world puts conduit underneath roofing?
Yeah.
When they built that building, that's what they did. They ran all the conduit for everything underneath the roof.
Must have been.
Yeah, we found a few of those. Yeah. Well, at least our fire alarm only beeped there for a minute, so that's a good thing. So that's the other project we're working on, is the doors upstairs for Quartz, get those replaced for some security.
That was paid for by a grant? Or we did that.
We matched it, yes. Right. Yep. So it's a good thing to get done. Those doors are outdated and pretty thin. Space, I was working on a consolidation study with Ethos Project Management, looking at different options on what we could do with space. Potentially moving public health and community development over to the first floor of our justice building. That was one option. Another option would be to move the DA's office downstairs and bring family court over into the justice building as well.
Putting a courtroom up kind of where the law library DA office is.
So family court would no longer be at F Street. It would
exactly.
be
consolidating and potentially one entrance to the second mm-hmm. floor.
Yeah.
It's a great. It's actually the idea has a lot of merit.
Would they come through the
justice entrance?
Justice entrance, and then so that solves the problem of the single
DA
point over
court,
here.
Nothing from this floor would go upstairs. You know, we'd wall that off or whatever. We'd block it off.
Yeah, the Library of Congress has really nice glass panels across, so you preserve the historic ability you can see through. But I mean, even if you had to put emergency slam doors to get out for exit,
sure. Right.
But it preserves the look of the marble and all, but it secures the area so you can't go up and down.
Yeah, and then you can have, you know, totally different functions going on in the same building. We were looking at the different options, and that would free up the juvenile building. To move public health or planning in there. We also looked at bringing juvenile over into the justice building, and Jim's not opposed to that now with video conferencing and so forth for courts. But recently, District Attorney Mulkins has asked for more space. He's hiring a couple new district attorneys, and they're right on top of each other.
Well, the sheriff's program adds a DA and an assistant.
So does the grant they just got.
Right, yeah. That's what I mean. That's the sheriff's grant. Is that the one they talked about?
Yeah, I believe so. And
the SRS is another one.
Yeah, so they're growing rapidly. So it kind of...
What's going on with the basement level over there?
The basement level?
Because that's still all open where the lockers are, and it's still Siege's secure area.
We're looking at...
The old EOC is down there.
Looking at potentially moving IT or another internal department.
Why not DA's office, first floor basement? They can go up and down those stairs. They have the elevator access if they need, and then they have the room to spread out on that side.
Well, he's projecting that they could use at least 75% of the first floor, so he's looking for somewhere around 10,000 to 12,000 square feet.
But would not the basement and the first floor, what's left of the old sheriff's office, give them what they need?
We could do that.
That keeps them consolidated to...
Yeah. We were also looking at potentially moving legal over there because they're out of room as well. We need to free up some space for mechanical equipment here. So we would basically, the office on your left where Pat and Chantel are now...
Where we just moved them?
Yeah, that would become part of finance. Arthur's office would become mechanical equipment. A lot of different options. Yeah, it wouldn't be too loud. So there's a few different options. But the DA needing more space has kind of blown up the work that we've done just because we're growing so quick.
He'll have to manage with the space that we provide him. When the pieces have to go together, it's just the way it is. I mean, he's looking at the numbers that he has right now, you know, needing 75% of the 17,000 square feet, that's a nice to have. But we have to configure it in a way that makes sense for him.
Yeah.
I just don't know that you've got to make those things with that plan of putting the single point of access, secure, all that sort of deal, and moving juvenile over. It's just kind of the way.
I think that's our best option.
I don't think juvenile moving over is the smartest thing, especially with the detention over there and staff covering in different ways. I'd like us to explore other options before looking at moving juvenile over.
Okay. I did communicate with Jim about it.
Jim will be amenable to whatever he's told to do. But as far as we have a juvenile justice center that has a detention and the shelter, and the staff in there that's working with those kids sometimes as well, because you got the probation officers that sometimes have kids detained, it doesn't make sense to move them so far away when they already are fitting in their space.
If they need to get to them, they could just say, I call them and say, hey, I'm having trouble with so-and-so, and they just walk next door.
Yeah, so it's...
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of interaction between the two buildings throughout the day. That the one's running shelter detention, and then the other one is probation, and I don't know about their day-to-day work.
Yeah.
But the main goal was to try to find space to allocate for public health as well as community development. So how to shuffle it around for departments that didn't need to be as public-facing and just without going out and getting more property, use what we have.
Well, maybe we could just put public health over there and then community development can go someplace else. The plan would be to put them at the consolidated public works facility because those should be together.
Yeah, in the long term.
So, but you could put public health and juvenile in the same building.
One of the emails we got from one of the staff related to the reports up there was mentioning the other building down here is potentially trying to acquire.
Which one?
The old B of A building.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. We've
been a mess down there, but it's got a lot of parking.
Yeah, and it's like three times the size of what they would use. So we would be with empty spaces.
But public works and building safety and planning and, but...
And it's taking the private sector thing for prime real estate off. It's no, we just need to make better use. This consolidated plan looks at those elements of trying to utilize the space that we have as efficiently as possible. Public health, we've got to follow up. You're the liaison. You should, with the CO, we spent $5,000 with the expectation that would be a letter of interest in going towards the design work to move public health into the next CCO building up
all care.
And I don't know where that
I'd
is.
I'd be happy to call and touch base with Doug.
I haven't been involved in that piece of it.
So yeah. they had a groundbreaking up there for that second building, and they never did anything. Have they built it yet? Mm-hmm. I mean, they had the governor down here for the. They were gonna.
Yeah, that's true. They had all that.
Yeah,
I'll touch base with them. I'll call them and see what's going on with it. As far as the other goes, though, I mean, quite frankly, if we have to move legal, we could potentially take this arm of when the PD moves out of the division mm-hmm. where admin is. Or a portion that we need and wall it off from the rest so their access is still from this side.
Yep.
And then that leaves the rest of that secure space with that secure entrance and the basement that the DA's office could utilize because they have ADA access for those employees that would need to go downstairs, but they also can have the main area with the counters and stuff for public access. To me, that makes the most sense as far as the DA needing more space.
Yeah, if we did that and moved legal, then we would leave room at that point to have more growth because they wouldn't occupy the whole space at that point.
I can't anticipate the DA getting much larger than where we're at, right?
Yeah,
and I'm two more. That's it for a while.
Yeah, and I'm just going by the feedback I'm getting from him.
He's right. He's got four more people coming. But I don't anticipate it getting any larger than that because the DA was pretty much kept whole through all of the reductions, minus one DA or so, and to add back, we added back and then add back two more.
They've been in that space when they were staffed way higher.
They actually haven't changed that much since I've been here. Staff-wise, they were the least reduced in 2012.
Well, I think we're getting into nuts and bolts and desks and chairs and what style lights which you have. And I think this is a big picture. I think we need to look at it comprehensively when that time comes.
Well, it's
all good
here.
Conversation. Yeah. But
we're looking at doing those. What Ryan's talking about is actually moving forward with he's going to need resources in order to redo that section that was vacated by the sheriff in 2013. And being prepared to move the DA downstairs and starting now with the two, he doesn't have space for the two that he's got acquired, right?
So exactly, and we have one member of legal down there now.
Yeah.
So we do have to kind of start the dominoes.
Yeah.
Because we're out of space, so we have.
But he's past CJIS clearance, so he can intermix.
Right.
So. He's got the legal backing that he needs to. He can be in the secure space. So if they did intermix, it's not a conflict because he got a CJIS clearance.
Yeah,
I don't know that I see that much. We have custodial staff that works through there, facility staff. I walk through there. I'm not CJIS clearance. I mean, I'm not getting into their business in their offices. I'm just walking in the hallway. So I hear what you're saying.
It's their compliance that I'm trying to help maintain.
I'm not worried about it unless
we could get us all CJIS cleared and it would be fine. But
yeah, and then I believe that they probably were still covered if they closed the interior doors as well, because I believe some of those have keypads and such. They're left open where it could be secured also, but that's something else we could look at.
Well, and we don't have to yet, because you're not talking about doing anything until the police are out. Are you talking about starting to stretch right now?
Yeah.
Well, I would say, you got the old sheriff's space. If the DA needs to expand.
But I didn't want to place him down there if we were opposed to that in the long run.
No, I think it makes a lot of sense. I'd like to see
if that's where they're going.
If that's where we're, that's what he's asking for direction.
If that's
right
where
now,
they're
you
going,
do it. And then
say you got to move because we're going to move public health in here, or we're going to move planning.
I think your plan is right on moving towards the idea of consolidating courtroom space. That has been one of the biggest facilities challenges is in reducing liability and having a single point of entrance for the courts and being secure. I think that makes a lot of sense, and it's a good step in the right direction. So.
Yeah, and I think that would allow for legal to intermix in that space as well.
Yeah,
that's
and free up some other areas here in the courthouse, because I would like to free up some of legal's area now.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of start down that path. But with that in mind, we'll have to find other space for public health.
Yeah, well, let's work on that.
Or
run the traps and
or try to put them in where the city is. But then you got HIPAA laws and CGIS trying to intermix, which is not going to be an easy thing to do.
Next.
Next. Fire alarm for the Justice Building. We got the estimates back. We're right around $110,000. So we'll go out for a formal RFP. The only other option I'll be talking with Arthur about is if we do keep it as a proprietary system, we could still maintain it but not make changes. And then I believe at that point we could go to a single source vendor to expedite the process and get it done a lot quicker.
Can you refresh for us why we're having to do this? We have two systems.
We have two systems that are interconnected. The interconnection is not the strongest. The Justice side is a 1975 old school bell system. So when it does go off or somebody pulls it as an evacuation for another event, people aren't hearing the alarms because they're just an old school bell. So this would be the upgrade where you would have horns and strobes. People would have to leave the building because it's ear-piercing. It also, the system's 40-plus years old. It needs to be upgraded. There's maintenance issues, parts issues.
I thought we just upgraded the courthouse's fire system, fire alarm system.
Yes.
A few years ago.
Yeah, we actually installed one and never had one. So we put in a fire alarm system. It was state court funded. When it was installed as a proprietary system. So we can't make any changes to it without that particular company being involved. It's a great system. I have no problem keeping that and just expanding it into the Justice Building. So that's kind of
what we're at. That's what costs $110,000? Mm-hmm.
Basically to replace the Justice side.
Wow.
But then that puts the whole courthouse and Justice side all in one system.
They're all tied together. Yeah. Yeah. So that you pull a pull station anywhere in here or the Justice side, and you got horns and strobes going off.
When we had the drill, there was a different sound for different things. Like active shooter had a different sound than a fire, for instance.
We're moving away from that to just one sound, and you react. Because you don't know if it's fire or shooter or whatever. You react as though it's
the same way every time. Leave the building.
Or no, you make the best decision. You look,
run,
you run,
right.
You hide, you know, yeah, you do what you have to. You assess and
training
figure it out.
The same for fire, everything else. You
And a fire, you don't open the door and take off before you know if the door's hot. You look to see if there's smoke. You feel for heat before you open a door. You know, the trainings and such aren't just open a door and run.
Yep. Yeah. And I think we got to the point where we didn't need to have a separate system to tell us to get out of the building. We were just going to write the policy as pull a pull station, evac, whether it's, you know, a bomb threat or a fire. So that's where we're at with that. I think we're going to be forced to upgrading it. Whether we do it by choice now or within the next few years, we'll have to do it anyway.
So there's the vendor who the preparatory system of this building is still active?
Yes.
So an RFP for a proprietary system is not necessary?
I don't believe so.
So we need to just go with that system?
Yeah.
And they're quoting us? I hate being over the barrel of...
Well, I have more than one quote.
Oh.
And the quotes came in within $10,000 of each other.
Okay.
So I don't feel bad about staying with that because we did the honest check.
Okay,
so
great.
I'm comfortable with that. We don't gain a whole lot.
That's not chump change to the facilities reserve. That's just...
Yeah.
But it's like, how do you not? It's so basic.
Yeah.
You've got to have it. I think picking that we do one system, because they were talking about $250,000 for a system that whooped and did something else so that you knew what was going on, but maybe somebody pulls it to get you to think that it's something and it's something else.
Yeah.
There's all these liabilities with, there's no perfect system. So going with the cheaper system where everybody is trained the same over the whole building, I think that's what you have to do.
Yeah, and I think more of the counties than not are using that boilerplate.
You explored what are other counties doing,
yeah.
Specifically Douglas County, just given their situation on the back of the UCC thing.
And more and more are just putting their money to make sure their fire alarms are bulletproof, top-notch, and training people, you know, more training and have a bulletproof fire
system.
So
not having to do the RFP, because I wanted this done by the end of the year when we were talking about this.
I thought it actually had already been worked on because I saw some fire personnel step out there.
That's what I think they were doing to get the...
It's labor-intensive. We're talking, you know, miles of wire, lots of devices, and just like every other contractor, trying to get people to allocate time to even give the bids.
Right.
But I'm comfortable going with the original contractor and moving forward as long as, you know, we're able to do that.
Well, this was a priority of the board to get that system functioning. I think for people who had concerns about the system before, and our commitment to say, no, we've got to get that fixed. That's unacceptable. So.
And we are currently functioning as designed. Which is
just not optimal.
Not optimal by any means. And even eliminating the lockdown alarms and so forth, having two different sounds in adjoining buildings causes confusion every time.
Yeah.
You know, so
well, even right now, there was people evacuated.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. Had our fire alarm stayed on, we would have had to leave.
Yes.
Because you couldn't handle the sound.
Okay.
So...
Well, I
not deaf. It's okay.
I'm moving fine. Forward. Yeah.
I have to ask a question. Was there an alarm that went off when the lights went out?
I thought it was just the elevator.
It was the UPS on the fire alarm gave us a loud beep, and that
I didn't hear that, so it's all right.
I thought it was the elevator. It was actually the fire alarm.
Yeah, the fire alarm and a few UPSs just momentarily.
I didn't hear that. So
good. That's perfect.
I'll just follow Lily.
Yep.
Where are you going, Lily?
Come with me, Dan. We're getting you out of the building.
Yeah.
So I would endorse Ryan moving forward.
I think so. I think going with one company is smart. That also, when you have two companies involved, you're all of a sudden, I didn't do that. He did.
Yeah,
exactly. You get this, he said, she said, back and forth.
Really?
There's always an escape route when there's two people involved, but one, they're holding the bag for the whole build, for the whole project.
Right, there's three of us.
Start to finish.
That's right. That's true. Right.
He went that way.
Yeah, exactly.
Simon, it's time for you to leave the building.
Follow me, Dan. Follow Lily.
Follow Lily.
Is that your understanding? If it's a
correct.
Okay. So
okay.
Yeah. We're good.
Yeah, we're good.
Okay.
We can
what
move
would
forward.
Be your ideal time frame if we pulled the trigger on a contract?
I just need to touch base with the contractor and see what their schedule's like.
We would like to see by the end of the year, but I know that would be a tall order.
Yeah, I can touch base and get back with you.
Great.
Yeah, you bet. We're probably going to be doing, we still have to do some testing in the back lot here, but we have a small leak in one of our diesel tanks, a 12,000-gallon tank buried in the back parking lot here, so... Coming up soon, you'll see some activity. We'll be blocking the parking lot. We're going to do a helium test, try to find the leak. Hopefully it's in a line and not in the tank itself, but it appears it's in the tank, but not huge. But
how do we find those things?
They're going to pump the tank full of helium and then sniff test by boring holes in the parking lot to find out if it's in the line or in the tank.
I don't have a good enough sniffer for that.
Yeah.
So where are we going to be that day? I think that's a Salem AOC day.
So, is there any other projects you'd like an update? We got plenty
yes.
of them. So.
I have one. Yeah. They measured the window at the BCC for bulletproof glass or whatever, and then that's last I've heard.
Yeah, it was ordered months ago.
Okay.
We've turned the screws on the contractor.
It's in the work. I mean, yes. I keep hearing all the stuff we're going to do upstairs of this and security and then we're still sitting behind a plate glass window down
here. Yeah, exactly, and it has been ordered.
Okay.
It's a reoccurring theme. The other item I just wanted to give you a heads up, the Ambassador, we tried power washing it. We can't really hit it with high velocity power washers.
It takes off this side.
It'll peel it off, yeah.
Yeah, it'll peel it off. It's like a styrofoam. With stucco, yeah. So we're going to try to get it painted before winter hits. So
Another thing I would like to see, it's just a small thing, but now the spiders are all gone for the year. Can we clean all the cobwebs on the windows around here?
Yeah, well, we have a window company that's going to be coming in to clean them all.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and we've recently...
Inside and outside or just outside?
We'll do both. Yeah.
I don't know that we ever did the windows cleaning.
I still have circles on mine from their installation.
Yeah, we never did that.
Yeah, I believe we did the outside once after they were installed, but no interior, so they need to be done.
Yeah, I have like five circle spheres on mine from the suction things. Yeah.
So yours didn't get touched.
And just then, you know, I may have already talked about this, but I reached out to James Lowell, the school district, because I know they're planning on changing the roof at Redwood School at some point in time.
Okay.
And I encouraged him to not, you know, part of their contract, that don't just rip it off and throw it out of the parking lot, crumple it up and throw it away, that we could probably repurpose that roofing on, say, for instance, the livestock barns out at the fairgrounds.
Yeah.
And I, you know, there'd be plenty. I missed the boat. When I drove right by Southern Oregon Medical Center every darn day thinking, boy, that roofing, it sure could go somewhere. Mm-hmm. And the next thing I know, it's all crumpled up with a thumb and laying out in the parking lot getting ready to be hauled off.
Yeah, you and me both.
The James and I talked about that, and he said, well, you know, it's going to leak. And I says, it's a livestock barn.
Right.
I says, first off, you know, we can reseat that and felt it. And to be quite honest with you, I don't think it's the roofing that's leaking out there. I have another idea where their leak coming from, so I've got to chase it all over the place. But I'm going to let them figure that one out. And though I think we could repurpose that roof up there pretty darn fast.
I think for that kind of application, it works. Oh, it works
perfect.
Great.
Yeah, and that would outlast, and it would outlast. I have a metal roof on my house that's 27 years old, and I would have replaced it if it had been a comp roof.
And that goes with the arena question that I was going to bring to the board is we have estimates in. We're waiting to get... Mary's got grants coming. She's trying to get them verified before we start. It looks like we're going to have to do the plastic one more season.
What's the... Are you getting bids in on what that roof would take to replace?
Yeah, we had basically an architect has did a study of the building and then gave us cost estimates for replacing the roof in different styles. Basically, you're $90,000 difference to go with a metal roof as opposed to like a membrane style. Mm-hmm. So I would recommend going with the metal roof. It's going to look better. It's going to be there forever.
Is comp in there somewhere, like a 20-year comp or 30-year comp?
We couldn't do comp on the roof. We could only do part of it in comp because of the barrel and the flats.
Okay.
Yeah, we could do a built-up. But same, you're still looking at, well, that one's probably... I want to say $60,000 to $70,000 difference. The metal is the most expensive.
For sure.
But you don't have that reoccurring cost down the road. So, and we're ready.
Round figures, what is, say, the metal roof? So you say, okay, we're going to go with the metal roof forever. What is it?
$290,000.
$290,000, okay.
I thought we were going to get a presentation on that. I felt like it was happening, and then it got postponed.
Mary was going to schedule something with the board once she had the grants.
I think that's what it's going to be.
Okay.
So,
yeah, I'm looking for this budgetary element about we have this much, because I don't want to get surprised by the delta that the board is going to have to say, okay,
sure,
we're prepared to shore up the difference on.
But I think
and I think we've made a commitment to do that, but I feel like my commitment is getting undermined if I have to, you know, pony up a check for $10,000 for plastic for whatever. Another year or something. You know,
yeah.
Where are we at on?
We're just in a holding pattern. I mean, we're ready to go. All we got to do is put the construction docs together. We've already did preliminary estimates. I want to say it's around $700,000 to do the whole project.
And I know Arthur's got like a preliminary budget. I've seen it. The delta isn't that big, but
I'm not opposed to putting the plastic on there for one more year, only with the caveat that something happens next year. This plastic thing, it's a nightmare because it's going to be blowing off again next summer.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but we still need to protect what we've done out there so far and keep it dried in for this winter.
Mm-hmm.
I get that because we're not going to get a roof on there before this winter.
No.
So you really have to do something out there for now. But
right.
But I just don't want that to be, we'll do it again next year and we'll do it again next year because it's 10, I guess. How much is it to put plastic up? 8 to 10?
Yeah. Yep, and then another couple to tear it back down and sweep it up before fair.
Yeah.
And that was the goal, was to get a roof on it before we moved into winter, but the grants weren't secured.
Right. So if we put a target on ourselves.
Like multi-year.
Yes, it's not going to be. I mean, as it is, they were hoping they could borrow from the reserve and pay it back as they get the money. So Rotary's commitment was 2 years firm and third if needed.
Yeah.
And so.
But that's Rotary's commitment, and that isn't what she's. That Rotary's commitment was for the underpinning and the bleachers and things of that sort. The roof, I think, was supposed to come from.
I believe the big ticket was the Ford Foundation. We walked through the building, and she's waiting for that.
Well, let's wait to have her give that.
And my understanding was that some of these grants, that if we put the money up, then. You can't get reimbursed type deal. You got to get it up front, but I'm not involved in that piece.
Well, that makes sense. If I'm the grantor,
and you can afford to do it,
why am I giving you money?
Right.
So it shouldn't be a reimbursement thing. From their standpoint, you need the money, we'll give you the money, and then you do the project. But they just, when they sign a letter of commitment or a letter of intent or something that you can...
Well, essentially, they were going to borrow the money to get until they can get the monies received. It wasn't that it necessarily a payback. It's a borrow.
Yeah, they don't have the money. So I think maybe we could... Let's wait and have Mary talk.
I think we need to wait to see what the results of the grant applications are before we do anything further.
Yeah, and just so we're clear, I mean, as far as facility goes, we're ready to go.
Okay,
we're waiting for the go-ahead.
Are you asking there? Well, I guess you're announcing today that you're going to put the plastic up there, and I think we have to do that.
We don't want more damage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't have a choice.
Yeah. You know, if we were to have a roofing contractor in place that we were putting the roof on, I would feel comfortable that would be part of the job. They would keep it sealed, watertight while they're doing the rest of the roofing. But since we haven't got the funding secured, then we just have to.
Yeah,
we just have to go with that Band-Aid again this year.
The series that I see is Peggy and Mary have to come in and make that budgetary presentation, and we'll work out those challenges. You're going to have a $100,000 delta at the end of this project. We've got 3 years of committed funding. We got to bridge that gap, and all those things can be worked out.
Yeah, I think we need a comprehensive look, snapshot of it when we get everything in place. But I think it's smart to wait until see what Mary has to say. Mary and I can come in and tell you, oh yeah, I got these. To apply for the grant doesn't mean you have it. But when you have that commitment from the grantor, I think that's what she needs to come in.
And she has the whole budget on what we're talking about to do, everything that was proposed. We've had engineers.
If there's help for clarity, I believe I would go with the metal roofing. And so if the board could
prioritize
that to say, you know, we're in favor of
it. I don't know. I've been in the metal business, yeah.
I would like to move away from the theoretical membrane stuff, but I want to know the expansion and contraction element of that size of a metal roof on a concave, that we're not going to have people up there every other year replacing screws because they get, you know, the flex. You know all about this, and that's my
main concern. Well, see, that's what Redwood School, but Lincoln's the exact same way. Those are footprints of each other, I think.
Yeah, they were built the same year.
But they made panels the full length so they wouldn't have a seam. But you've got to have expansion and contraction. And you take a 40-foot panel, it may move this much, whereas a 10-foot panel only moves this much. And so, you know, you do that basically like shingles, and away you go.
And these will move.
They'll move anyway.
They'll move, and the screw element won't be exposed either because it's a snap lock type product.
Right.
And then you got, I think, we're 130-foot.
We don't get hurricanes, so we're okay with that.
It's a huge span for that barrel. So, but it is engineered.
I do have a question for you. Custodial staff in this building.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of changes lately. A lot of different people coming and going. And not many of them are actually wearing your shirts that your staff wear. So it's kind of like, is that person supposed to be... They weren't even wearing, I mean, multiple colors, multiple, nothing uniformed. Correct.
They're supposed to be attended with a full-time staff member at all times.
Okay.
And I've had reports that wasn't happening.
No, they're all working different places alone.
Yeah, that can't be happening. And I've talked to the custodial supervisor.
Okay.
Because they're not CJIS cleared for one reason. Plus, they're through a temp agency. So we've had different, you know.
Well, and that's what I was trying to figure out. What's the deal with, are these new hires and they just haven't got uniforms yet, or they?
We're doing temp to hire because we had no luck just trying to fill them. Yeah. So we bring them in, try them out, see how they're doing. And then I believe we're down to our last hire. So it's.
Okay. Yeah, Sieges is strict enough that your person watching them isn't working. They're actually there just watching.
Yeah.
And that seems like a waste of time often, but.
Yeah, it is. It's actually more labor.
Yeah.
More time and gets them further behind. But.
It's all right. I ended up watching people one day at a building just so your staff could get some big projects done and the doors are open. And so I was there watching the entrances.
Yeah. Yeah, we appreciated that. So that's great. And we probably will be coming to the board to add more staff because as the jail ramps up and some of these other departments are ramping up.
As the county grows, you've got to grow with it.
Yeah, just as an example, 10 years ago we were processing about 3,000 service requests annually. This last year we did 6,500 service requests. So
quit asking.
And you're also getting people to utilize the service request program,
whereas
10 years ago it was more ad hoc.
Yeah.
Some people were using it and some people were just calling you up.
Right, and we had
That's
a lot
true.
Of grabbing people in the hallway. Hey,
yeah.
You know, while you're here, can you do this real quick? We don't do that anymore.
The other thing, at some point you guys empty trash less often or do different stuff like that. Is that still?
It just depends on the staffing level, but for the most part, it should be on a nightly basis. Bathrooms and trash are every night.
Okay.
So the vacuuming, those type of things are where things get.
Connie still takes out or recycles, so I just want to make sure that we're.
Yeah, and I don't believe we've ever changed that. We still have staff takes a recycle, dumps it into the big bins, the one closest to them. But I do have some staff that'll grab it and empty it, so it's hard to keep consistent on that one.
Have we ever considered, I know in business, there's some of the larger companies had their own trash compactor and were able to bail stuff. And I mean, you know, before you get all done, instead of having a bin this size, you've got a block about the size of that chair. And they were doing sheet metal. I had a sheet metal company out of Salem, and I said, where's all your junk? And they go, we just mash it all up, have what we have, our own compactor, and then we end up with a block of steel we take to the recycler, and it really saved a lot of time and money and effort.
Yeah.
And if, you know, I didn't know if a trash compactor somewhere, I don't know where, but
no,
you know, it seemed to work out.
I'm actually looking at putting one here in the back lot where the existing dumpster is, because we use one up at Dimmick that the hospital had left.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
It's okay. Probably saves us somewhere around $10,000 a year.
Yeah.
Just using that compactor.
And it's just so handy because it saves all the space and you don't have the stuff blowing all over and whatnot.
Yeah, and then you have less traffic coming to empty it. We empty it once a month, maybe once every other month, as opposed to weekly.
Okay.
So.
Okay, good job. Anything else for Ryan and facilities?
No, I think we need to put together an opportunity in a general discussion to really hash out, like you were saying, from a 30,000-foot perspective of the consolidation and really understanding the shortcomings of our current facilities for the staffing needs at the jail and some others.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to need a consolidated evidence room that he's got to be working on, you know, that all of these things need to be moving forward.
All of it with the logistics in mind, you know, as to how to make it better, how to move things around and make it better.
Right.
Great.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Item number three is information technology quarterly update. John McCaffrey, if you'll step to the center, sir. Hear you out.
Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
Morning, John.
So just a few things today. Jason, our website information developer, is starting October 1st. I'm proposing that he starts with IT for a period of time to learn the old website and some of the other things for IT before the board takes him to do the PIO. Obviously, you can use him whenever, but just as a base of operations, it would be good to have him for a while. So that's a proposal and recommendation. I'm also recommending that we purchase the services of a company called KnowBefore. This is separate from our discussion last time about data governance. This is purely related to training people and testing people on phishing. The cost is very reasonable. $5,500 for 1 year for all of our employees, $4,435 if we sign a 3-year contract. It provides unlimited phishing emails, tracks who's false clicking, sends them notifications that they've false clicked, sends us notifications of who these people are, sends them training that applies to what they've done, and becomes part of a program of just basically getting them off the social engineered emails.
John, is there a chance that this could be integrated into what you would call as your IT security strategy plan? I think we need one, and I think you have one, but it's probably in your head. I'd like to see that as one element in how we do this. Addressing new hire training when somebody's coming in, they're oriented. There are ramifications for people who fail this more than twice. You forego your step increase if you fail this more than once. I don't know, but there's got to be some ramifications. I think about the fiscal impact of somebody letting something into our system willingly, unknowingly, but willingly. There's got to be, it's not their business, so they never feel it. But there has to be something that's an incentive, other than just doing the right thing, that gets people to doing the right thing. Because of their own fruition, there's a low-hanging element of just, they're just going to keep doing it. Because there are no ramifications.
If they did it, do you have any kind of number on what it takes to say, okay, somebody opens up a bad email and it infiltrates the system? That takes time and effort on your department to go undo that. What's the extent of the damage? I don't know if you could even put, do you have a number that, you know, annually it costs me so many hours trying to unwind these things?
So what we...
I think we need some sort of a way to gauge if we're being successful or not.
So the bigger question of the strategy and the policy and the overall level of IT support and full circle on it, I'm going to bring up today. But we had 15 people click on our fake phishing email that we had, and then a week later, 15 people clicked on a fairly good phishing one that was a real phishing attempt for, and it was very apropos. It was right when we were talking about health benefits for staff.
Yeah.
It was a health benefit click on. So we had 15 people click on that too.
Same people?
One person was the same. So I talked to the department head and said, you really need to talk to this person. So internally, we set up the procedure, and I'd like to discuss that as part of the strategy, where we the ones who clicked, we automatically disabled their account. And they had to call us to get re-enabled. Frankly, they were pretty apologetic. Most people knew they had screwed up, and they called us. And we just said, you know, thanks for calling. We gave people the opportunity to self-report. And those people that did, about 10 of the 15 did, which I thought was very positive.
Nice.
Hey, John, I clicked on this after we sent out, don't click on this. So the retribution was they had to call us, reset their password. They were locked out until they could. And we did a virus scan on their machine. And so that's a part of a procedure. What I'd like to do is discuss IT strategy as a whole. If you look on the sheet, there are about nine places that IT policies are underlined in our administrative and personnel policies. My idea is to have an IT policy and best practices handbook, basically like the fleet handbook, like there's a safety handbook that's part of our policies. This would go before the board. The board would approve. This is what happens when you do this. This is how you get help with doing this. This is what this word means, a glossary, an index.
put it in a web-friendly interface. It's still policies approved by the board, but it's an explanation for people who are not IT professionals, simplification of what we're trying to do. MIT has a really neat one. I was looking for something that better presented IT policies.
And is this satisfying your question a minute ago?
It is partially. These are all tools of it. When teachers go back to school, they get like a day, and it's grueling. I'm not suggesting that. But annually, all of our staff being required to do a half an hour tutorial on our policies. As before you can start your work in 2019, you will go through this half an hour multiple choice or tutorial of some sort that just refreshes everybody on, you know, because having it's one thing, but people don't necessarily visit it and do those. So out of that, you need to reset your password. You need to, I haven't done that since I've been here. Probably shouldn't, I should do that today. But you know what I mean? Of all making them do stuff so that you did this. You completed it in January. It's February and you're having problems. You know, I see it in November, but February, we just went through this. Something of that effect.
So we did add orientation. We do orient every new employee a half an hour. Keith or I do it. Mm-hmm. And that's worked out very well. So the new employee comes in and they hear about phishing for sure. They hear about safe use of their computer. They hear about email. Yeah, so we...
I never got an orientation on anything, and I would love to have that half an hour.
Well, it's every Monday, pretty much. We have one to five, six employees now. So HR is doing a weekly orientation. We're part of that. But I agree with the annual training. I think it's a great idea.
It's just one more of those things.
It's one of those tools that just keep, hey, this is important. It's at least as important as blood pathogen. Or
I think it's really cheap security for the potential liability of somebody getting into our system can be not so cheap.
As to the know before, I think it's a pretty reasonable cost. It is kind of separate from this. It does do the tracking and the training, the annual training that you're talking about.
Good.
I think it's reasonably priced. They've come very, very well regarded in the Gartner scale. They're way up there. They're about the only business that does this. So I'd like the board to consider that.
I don't know what the Gartner scale is.
Oh, the Gartner scale is a way of all technologies. Is it a value for its money? Mm-hmm. Depending on the quadrant, you've seen the chart. You'll have risk versus reward.
Right.
The upper right is always the best place you want to be. Lower risk, better reward.
Right.
Gartner is the company that does it, and know before it shows up extremely well.
Great.
And I'd also like because this IT project for a policy handbook that's separate but still enforced by the board will be a big project for me, which I'm glad to undertake. I'd like support to go ahead with that as well.
I think it's a great thing.
I agree on both.
Yep.
Okay.
Same here.
The fire JIC, I think that was a big success. 11,000 phone calls. We've ordered some smaller, more mobile switches so that we can configure seating setup any way that it might show up.
Awesome.
So instead of having a switch in the middle and then all these. I was very nervous about how it was going to work because we didn't have the infrastructure to support that, but it worked out very well. VoIP on the fly was, I thought, a real success.
We borrowed those phones from Jackson County?
We're going to buy 10 of them because Jackson County has better buying power than we do. They're giving it to us at our cost.
Okay.
And so we're just going to keep those phones and those switches set aside for an emergency that they can just go.
Thank you.
My concern was is if they had to set up something, I mean, we did a regional one here, but if they had a different kind of emergency over there, they would need both infrastructure. So
right. The
time to try to order that as well. Let's put that emergency on hold until those phones come in 10 days.
Yeah,
it
so.
Might not be a good idea.
And that's what did delay us was getting those phones. So we're just going to set them aside, put them in bags, and they're ready to go.
Great.
And the last thing I had was the fairgrounds effort for internet, I think, was a success. We've not gotten a lot of feedback. We did walk the grounds. We did a heat map to say where the coverage was, how good it was. It was very good, and the value for what they got, they're paying $160 a month for 200 megabytes so that anyone can get wireless access on the fairgrounds in that area, and I think it's working very well. I think it's something they can leverage for meetings and banquets and like vendors, that kind of thing.
Do we ever get close to our capacity out there? Or I guess if nobody knows it's there yet, we won't know.
The vendors did know, and they did use it. We didn't get anywhere close to the capacity.
Okay.
But it would be very interesting to really test it. So.
And being that it was the first time, it may be that other vendors utilize it more.
Yeah.
But it definitely was nice to have coverage out there.
And another opportunity for an emergency setup that we didn't have before. If the shelter becomes, or if the fairgrounds becomes more important in an emergency, we've got a separate line to get to the real world, to outside. So that's what I had for the board today, unless you had
any other questions for...
I do.
IT?
So Commissioner Morgan's been assigned this idea of the board to really review the communication needs. And I know that's vacillated between facilities and your wheelhouse, but I think both are going to need to be at the table in talking about the ability to co-locate potentially with the city when they make their move, looking at the appropriate dispatch and technology with capturing any kind of a record and having it really feed into our system pretty well, but dovetail with everybody else's being able to be shared. I know this much about what's necessary, and I'm illustrating a very small amount, but she's been a 911 dispatcher, worked in public safety. I think that she's going to be facilitating this, and I just wanted to make sure that you guys were on the same page with moving that forward and really having a proposal, I would think, by the end of the year of an overall strategy of what we need to do into the future. It's not going to be cheap. We've invested a significant amount of money in the past for what I thought was, but it pales in comparison to what other counties have invested in their infrastructure. And as rural patrol increases over time in the sheriff's office and the reduction in the amount of state troopers in the area, working hand in glove with the city of Grants Pass is going to be really necessary. And so setting aside with the objective of if another secure rural schools appropriation comes in, not investing that necessarily in operations or
in
more bodies, but potentially in capital. So the revenues might dovetail with your guys' projected project of what it could cost to upgrade all of our communication facilities.
And I had started with Aaron Kubik, but I should follow up with John. I apologize. I hadn't done that yet.
I'd suggest putting together maybe a work group that meets monthly to start with, outlining the challenges and then outlining potential solutions and giving people assignments to come back together. That's what's been effective for me. So
top two priorities for me in the past and now is dispatch. Mm-hmm. I would love to see a reunited 911 center. The software company that the city uses has been bought by Tyler Technologies, and there was at the beginning when they went to New World, there was a pushback between the CAD systems under the previous sheriff, and I think that can be resolved. The other issue
has Tyler brought more stability to New World, because New World is not a good program.
When I've talked to personnel at the city, the CAD program has gotten substantially better.
Okay.
I don't know if that's what you're hearing. There's also the huge lift of going something what you're comfortable with to a new CAD system. I think it was a real change management issue that probably didn't go very well.
My issue all along is that we had an outdated CAD system, kind of an AS400 kind of system before that all agencies were on.
Right.
And so it shared information. So if they were having issues with a person, no matter where they were in the county, they had all the history. And if that vehicle is reported stolen, it's not entered yet, all agencies have that. We don't have that anymore. And it was something that we asked. Now, the sheriff at the time had said he had to go with EIS because New World did not have a jail module.
Right.
And if New World does not have a jail module, that's still going to be an issue we're going to have to face. We were told up front When I was on city council, I was objecting to them going to New World if they were leaving the sheriff behind, because I wanted that officer safety component of them being able to communicate. And they said, oh, no, there's a patch, no problem. They should be able to do it. Except every time New World upgrades, it requires a new patch. And that cost is then prohibited for the sheriff to ever do the patch. And so they're not communicating. They're not sharing information. I know there's a desire to have that happen still, whether it's city stay with New World or it's together get a new software. And all that is on the table.
Okay. The other issue is radio towers.
Yeah.
I believe you set up something with budgeting with facilities to...
I don't know that I've had that approved by the board.
Mm-hmm.
My suggestion was is to take cell phone tower revenues that account for about $60,000 a year, maybe a little bit more now, and dedicate those to our infrastructure so that there's a dedicated trust of revenue stream. Because the challenge is that there's $500,000 of expense since I've, and it's not your guys' fault, it's my fault for not having done this 8 years ago. There would be $400,000 in that account right now if I'd have done that.
Yeah, so funding, whichever way we fund maintenance on the towers, the radio setup, is, I think, a very large priority for the county. I think we need to do it sooner rather than later.
Well, it kind of makes sense to take cell tower rent and put it back to communication of some sort.
True. I mean, it's not directly related, but it is kind of that are towers. But
all it is a revenue stream that's dispersed right now, and it isn't concentrated negatively impacting. Like, but you're going to have to be prepared for forestry not getting revenue. Maybe the fairgrounds.
And the fairgrounds.
Not getting the revenue for that.
Parks?
And saying, well, why am I not getting that revenue? I'm not utilizing the fair. Would say, I'm not utilizing that system. It's a infrastructure-based resource that has nothing to do with the fair, has nothing to do with parks, has nothing to do with forestry.
It's just their property.
I saw the eyes roll back there. I can hear the eyes roll.
See, that's a false philosophy. It's not their property. It's the county's property. And I'm looking for a revenue stream in perpetuity to fund something that we don't have the resources to fund otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only reason.
You
there's
know
a better revenue source.
How much is that? What's that dollar cent figure?
The deltas, we probably need $500,000 is what I've heard.
A year?
No, to upgrade our facilities right now. And so what you would do is you borrow it against facilities reserve, and you pay it back.
And those departments utilizing have to pay into the capital because...
Or you could just assess those programs.
Yeah.
A fee.
Community corrections uses them. Sheriff's office uses them. You know.
Assess them a fee for... That's... They're paying for the service. What they're not probably, what we're not capturing is the cost of the infrastructure.
Right.
So.
But it affects a lot.
Yep. I would like to sit down with you, Ryan, Arthur, and come up with a proposal.
I think that'd be the best to come before the board that says,
well,
this is how we're going to pay for
some
it.
Some of those departments
before
have outside funding revenues.
Before we tell parks
that
they're not going to get that revenue.
True. I don't think the revenues from the cell phone tower leases actually cover it all.
Mm-hmm.
So you might need both.
Correct.
Well,
and I'll follow up with you shortly, John, on the other one.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else for John?
No. Thank you.
Okay, item number four, Parks Department Quarterly Update. Sarah.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. We ask how you are, but we just took some of your revenue, so you better hurry up. Cause just kidding.
Going to be about $14,000 out of my pocket,
and
there's... Actually, what's interesting about the cell tower we have is it's on Sportsman Park,
mm-hmm.
and they receive 38% of that revenue, so we're left with about $14,000. But it's a 601F3 property, which means we had a land and water conservation grant for that property, so it can only be used for recreation. So the cell tower actually has that property out of compliance. So every time I ask for a federal grant, they tell me about a compliance, and we need to do something there. So eventually something will have to happen, but I'm not sure what they're suggesting yet.
Okay.
So I can update if you guys are going to continue to have those conversations and go from there.
Well, in all honesty, for your program, you would end up paying for it anyway. So whether or not we take the cell phone tower leases or go with the model based on users being assessed the capital cost of the infrastructure, you're probably doing pretty well at only contributing $14,000 if that's how we choose to fund it.
Sure.
Your assessment,
because you have utilized
assessment might be more than that if we
We'll
get there. Don't
it,
look at
it.
It
won't
total
break my budget.
No.
Okay.
A fire might, but
a fire does. Speaking of fire, I had one of my staff members create a report so we can see what the financial impact was for this. So what we have concluded is that we had total refunds of just about $84,000. That was for people that already had reservations that decided to back out and that we believe were directly related to the fire. I would say very few of those were because of other reasons why people cancel, because people are booking 9 months in advance. They have this thing planned out. On top of that, we were down camping nights in revenue from walk-in revenue of about $86,000. Additionally, we should have had a
$86,000 above the $84,000 is what you lost in walk-ins.
And you've got another number coming. So because we should have had a $5 per night increase this year with seasonal rates versus last year, that's an additional potential revenue loss of $22,000. So that brings my total potential revenue loss to $192,000.
So you didn't implement a seasonal rate increase?
It was there, but comparing last year's walk-in rates to this year's walk-in rate, it should have been an additional $22,000 with that. So the total impact to my department is estimated to be $192,000. We also had a fire last year. However, we did not see near as many. Yeah, so potentially it could have even been more if you want to compound what the loss was last year.
And it didn't have, and this year's was 2 months, and last year's was probably 3 weeks.
It was shorter last year, but we also had 100% closure of two of our locations this year and road closures, so the impact was much bigger.
I mean, we had Indian Mary, we had Griffin Park. White Horse people were also on level one, so they were concerned. And then you add to Lake Selmac and the fire camp.
And then Alameda, you couldn't get to there.
Yeah.
So just calm.
Josie from the Chamber of Commerce is putting together a financial impact questionnaire or whatever it is. She's trying to get that. And last night I attended the Ivy Airport. They had issues too of what they lost in revenue out there at Ivy Airport.
Sure.
From people visiting the museum and so on and so on and so on. These are numbers that Josie really needs to hear from us. So make sure she hears that. There is no.
Okay.
If you're, and you know, if we can't sue, we probably are not going to be able to sue, but I think there's a state thing to where they want to go to the governor and say, hey, this is what happened.
Yeah.
And not federally, the Clean Air Act does not apply to forest fires and wildland fires. So that's just part of the act. You just put that away and go from there. Very, very discouraging when that happens, when you take a congressional act and just abuse it.
What's this mean for your staff? What's this mean for?
Not much. What it really means is it affects improvements. This is reasons why things like Schroeder haven't been fully updated or other locations. It slows me down, so I've just got to rethink buying that extra tractor or doing those major projects. And so what we were able to do is reverse most of this revenue to last fiscal year. So what it did was reduce my carryover from last year for the most part. So when I'm looking at an apple-to-apple comparison on financials today for this budget year, so 2018 versus 19 for just July and August, I'm actually only in the negative by $5,500 because we have reduced expenses also knowing that this was going to happen. So what it means is nobody's at risk for losing their job. All our bills are still going to be paid. We just have to.
For moving forward, there's things that we've now put on hold.
Yeah, sure.
And if this happens next year, it is going to be jobs.
I have enough of a carryover budget that if the same thing happened last year, we would still be okay. But a third year might really mean that I have to, probably not jobs, but really start reducing what we're doing as far as improvements. We do a lot of improvements each year to our parks. We're spending a lot of money in capital, small capital projects.
Yeah, but that's not, you are not taking a capital hit. These revenues should be just dedicated towards operational.
What?
How much are you putting, why are you
roofing,
putting,
fencing?
Yeah, but why are you putting in general revenue for capital when you have your capital reserve?
Well, because we right now have that capital reserve that I'm leveraging for a $1.4 million White Horse project on top of other major projects. I want to leverage all that money for grant funding match. And so if That's I true. Start whittling away at that pot of money...
With one time, you know, one-to-one, you're not matching it. You're not leveraging it at all.
Exactly. So if we're doing major capital projects that okay. should be tracked and capitalized, that is coming out of there.
Good point.
But a lot of routine stuff that we're still just replacing shingles and painting and replacing rotting wood. And
writing checks for that. Okay.
Yeah, that, I just consider a lot of that normal.
No, that makes
budget.
Sense.
Mm-hmm. Trying to make sure normal that my expenses is passing.
Exactly. Well, that was the underlying philosophy was setting up those revenues from properties, that they're just not one-time deals, leveraging as much as possible. You're right.
So we're doing good. We feel okay. I'm keeping an eye on...
Well, something that you need credit for right now is the fact that a lot of managers historically, some managers historically, would start growing their programs with $400,000 carryovers, $500,000 carryovers to match.
Sure.
You've been, you know, I can, what you just said is I can go 2 or 3 years with these kinds of reductions in revenue and still keep afloat based on just this year's carryover. Mm-hmm. That's a phenomenal testament to you managing the right way and growing incrementally, you know, not the way you'd like to be, to where every major park has their own manager, ranger.
Yeah.
I can see a lot of people just doing it, growing overnight.
It's a good shock absorber, so you don't really feel the bump when it hits.
You're doing a great job.
Well, and I got to say, Sarah's been at most fire meetings. You've come to a lot, the impact of being a direct part of there and available and, I mean, it's kind of one of those things that you weren't just passively sitting there.
And I think you know, rather than, and I keep hearing it over and over, what are we going to do when this happens next year, instead of how are we going to prevent next year from happening? That's the problem that just aggravates me to no end. It's, oh, boy, we got to build up this and this on the backside. Boy, we got to have more people, wildland firefighters and stuff, when you could have really not had the fire in the first place. If you look at the basis for it, take away the fuel, take away the oxygen, and reduce the fuel to below its combustion temperature, and away you go. But we're not looking at that.
Yeah.
We're looking at, oh, how much, what can we do when this thing, catastrophic wildfire, hits again? I don't want it to hit again.
Yeah,
that's where I want to move our focus. And we just, I go to meeting after meeting after meeting, and we're all talking about the aftermath and emergency response and telephones and all of the other stuff, instead of talking about what could we have done to prevent this damn thing in the first place. That's where my frustration sets in. But that's just one commissioner.
Sure.
And, but anything else you have for us? Do you have any?
Do you guys have questions about finances? I can talk about a few other things. You're going to get a request through HR. I'm going to request to move one of my assistant rangers to a park ranger position. Then we'd have one senior ranger, 4 park rangers, and 1 assistant instead of 3 rangers and 2 assistant, which just allows me to be able to give more responsibility and do more with what we have. And then let's see, we are applying for another White Horse grant. I'm probably going to be asking them for about $500,000.
Is that still got a 10% match on that?
It'll be covered in the $1.4 million project we're chipping away at.
Okay.
For the White Horse project that's destined to begin about a year from now, if I don't get another grant, I can make it happen, but it would deplete the capital accounts that I have. So my hope is to not bottom that out.
Right.
So we're continuing to seek grants. That'll be through the County Opportunity Grant with
Fantastic.
Oregon. So you might have to do another order there.
Okay.
And then we're just focusing on ADA compliance, safety, park usability. We're looking at security cameras for places like Robertson Bridge.
We need to sit down with legal as the designated ADA compliance officer of the county and really hammer out what is that plan. I'm not expecting the plan tomorrow because we just assigned it to them formally last week, although we've had an objective of being ADA compliant, but we need to be answering those questions of why do you have to shut down a perfectly good fishing dock or what have you because it isn't ADA compliant, and just say there's a lot of facilities that are not ADA accessible, but that doesn't mean you shut them down. Maybe we delineate that they're not, but not every facility has to be ADA accessible.
That's correct. And my understanding is why we actually shut down the Schroeder dock there, it wasn't because of ADA compliance, but it was specifically because the railings are not there. They got washed out some 10 years ago and never replaced. So what happens is right now you have too big of a gap. So if somebody was to walk off it backwards, it could break your leg. And so
if I walk off the steps at the courthouse backwards, I'm going to break my neck.
Yeah, I think there's fall distance
where
you have
sense.
To have your railings
there's no
up.
Common sense thing in the ADA thing there.
Yeah.
I think we understand that. But like, for instance, can you post that this fishing dock is not ADA?
Yeah, we just don't advertise it.
This is not an ADA fishing dock. Please go over here onto the boat ramp or something and fish from the boat ramp.
The issue is, prior to me, they were advertised as ADA fishing dock, including Chinook, that has no ramp. You have to step over it. And
that's
so it
terrible.
Was the projection for the public.
Yes.
And should I have fixed that wording sooner? But, it's a drop in the bucket with everything else. And so that was
has
the
it been
attack
fixed now?
On that. It's fixed now. They're called fishing docks or platforms. They're no longer associated with ADA. We've reviewed all of our websites and looked through the bathrooms. Schroeder's shower restroom unit was never called ADA. The day-use bathroom was. And so this man's interpretation that he could have gone in there with a wheelchair was just an assumption on his part based on, a year being advertised as such.
Very, very good. That we need to be accurately portraying things that actually are the way they are and not false advertising. That is not a good thing. Setting people up for the expectation they can utilize something that they can't is not
wrong.
Good.
That's
not good. So,
now that we're aware of it, we'll just fix it, right?
Exactly. Everything's already fixed now, and we're being extra mindful moving forward and sign heights, all that stuff.
It doesn't sound like we were too far off anyway.
No. But we got to be accurate.
System-wide, it doesn't sound like we were too far off.
We can do better. And so that's
okay.
What we'll do.
That's probably a good answer. We can do better, and we will do better.
Something I feel like I've wanted to have specifically the public works liaison try to work with you on is a comprehensive assessment of the paving needs of all of our park facilities. One of the reasons that I thought it would be really in our advantage to have that not just historic assessment of the chip seal that's been done, but really the projection of where does Rob prioritize in the future, so that while it's on our radar to see that 5-year projection, you can also take advantage of the expectation of knowing when he's going to be in a Chinook area of the county for chip seal and say, hey, while you're out there, that's
great.
Hey,
this. Yep.
Just could you throw some fresh on that?
You got the roller and everything there.
Well,
fill it in.
You've said,
can you get us an assessment on that of your needs?
I need
that public works would be involved in?
I do need to sit down with Rob or whoever he designates in order to talk about those futures. I can tell you just about every location right now needs help. It all needs to be redone.
What I like about assigning them, if it's okay, the public works liaison, is that there's got to be, without you almost in the room, public works is never going to go in.
They're not
going to
do it.
They really
but
won't.
They are a county
they
road. They need to be part of the county road assessment.
They say they will, but they really don't.
Well, it's not on their radar, I can guarantee you
all
that.
Until the
liaison and the board says this is important from so many different viewpoints.
Yeah.
That it becomes, and I agree, hey, you're out there doing this. Why not just run down and take the opportunity to go down there and pave up around the bathroom or something?
And I can see that Rob's going to push back and say, I can't use gas tax dollars to go do this. I think Sarah's willing to pay for the materials, but utilizing the staff and the expertise, that seems ideal.
Yeah.
So if there's a need for, here's the cost of the hard goods, done.
Yeah. It just makes common sense. In working air conditioning, I was going to go over to the shopping center. Do I go to the shopping center every day to change the filters on a different business every day? Or do I plan a whole day and do the whole shopping center?
Exactly.
And everybody saves time and money and effort. And if you're on contract, that it's so many hours to do Payless Drugstore, for instance, and so many to do Griffiths Department Store, you couple them all together, you save money. Yeah. No doubt about it.
The only other thing on that is Public Works is doing a lot of chip sealing, which makes for a rougher road. So in boat ramps, I'm great with that. But when you move into campgrounds, I want smooth pavement so that people riding their rollerblades or bikes don't have that as they're going down the road, and it's
that
a little safer.
That may be something, because we don't pave in-house.
Correct. Yeah,
we,
so
we,
I
we
think there's
a all of our paving, so we may have to just have you bike the bowl and
sure.
all that, but any kind of a reduction in cost as far as just the entry roads,
yeah.
you know, that are not in a campground or anything, that we could just quickly chip seal would be awesome.
I agree.
Okay.
Perfect.
Anything else for Sarah?
My wife.
I would like to. I was going to try to get out with Dave Streeter this week to try to do an assessment. I'd say for siding on the arena and for the infrastructure, we would like. I'd like to have well underway before I leave. Is that those entry schematic,
park side.
You know, park
side.
just the shape. You know, and we can work on implementing, you know, this is going to be a big job of putting in 20 of these different mm-hmm. locations. But I can see one for the North Valley Industrial Park entrance. And there's a couple of others that I thought the airport might need one, you know, nice. So that there's a universal shape to every access point for the county, mm-hmm. maybe even the jail. I mean,
well, it identifies it as a county property,
right.
a county
a sign,
smoke jumper base for people.
You put whatever sign
nice
you want
sign
inside
there.
The shed, so to speak. But I need kind of a general endorsement that that's a good idea. And what I was looking to do is if you're going to have a mobile miller kind of come in, they have to have clean logs. So it's probably in our advantage to having roadside hazard tree removal style to where we go up, we just fall it, and the self-loader comes and puts it right on the thing. So you're not dragging these logs mm-hmm. anywhere. Or very short distance. So they need clean logs when they do one of these mobile mills, because when you send a load of logs to a commercial mill, they have a debarker that they
yeah.
run everything through to save the blades before it goes into the mill. He doesn't have that.
Can't have rocks and stuff.
No.
Yeah. I agree. Having a design in place would be great, and then holding off for the actual signs until county branding's done so that
oh,
you're
yeah.
not going to do that.
Yeah.
That was my one thing, is generally I definitely endorse incorporating in the branding.
Yeah, I almost said, I don't care what your sign looks like. I'm not working on that at all. All I'm doing is, this is the structure that your sign's going to hang in.
Sure.
It has to be, you know, can't be any bigger than whatever that space would be. And I think that they would vary in size depending on which location.
And we should have a recommendation on the other fairly soon for you guys
great.
As well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you. Item number five. Thank you very much, Sarah.
Of course.
Item number five, Commissioner Morgan, White House conference with Oregon state and local leaders.
I wanted to bring up the White House invitation again. And part of this was, we just had a meeting with Evan Wilson, and we asked, what do we do to help at the federal level get us help locally for getting some things done? You know, we've talked about how we enforce the ADA Act, the Clean Air Act, but not the ONC Act. And here we've had an opportunity to be invited to the White House as Oregon leaders to show up in the executive offices. And any staff agencies that we want represented there will be there, that we can discuss what our local issues are. And as much as we talk about that this is federal stuff, we're pushing, endorsing the Farm Bill, we're, you know, and trying to get Representative Walden's efforts supported, I think we need to be at the table, and this is not an opportunity that comes up every year to get invited to the White House and sit down with top executives, and I think that we're remiss in not being at the table representing Southern Oregon, and I would like the endorsement of the board to go and represent Josephine County in that manner.
I'm not opposed to going to the White House, but I think you need to leave here with a list of things.
Yep.
A list of concerns of this board, and we've got a bunch of them that are cropped up after this fire season, a list of concerns so that you can target and say, I need to go see that guy, and I need to go see that guy, and that guy.
Correct.
You make very best use of your time there and go from there. So with that, I have no problem with the White House trip, but it has to be very, very specific. So that when somebody says, you know, why did Commissioner Morgan go to the White House, say she was going to address these topics.
Well, and the expectation that you're going to go in February, you know, you can't just be a one and done. There's got to be a series of, it plays into a strategy. So I think that's totally appropriate.
But White House wasn't a part of February, though. We go. I mean,
no, it's part of NACO, but yeah. It's not part of their legislative fly-in that happens in February. I think that's the worst possible time of year to go to D.C. So, but that's why we get the rates.
Landing in an ice bank.
Apparently, they get the rates for the hotels or whatever.
But I think when we met with Evan Wilson down there at the Taplock, that was really, really important. So. And follow up on
and
that.
So I talked with, I recently got a notification for a RAC meeting. Mm-hmm. And so I called the BLM offices. I said, hey, two commissioners from our office applied for the RAC. What's the status of that assignment? And they said, it hasn't been assigned. I said, then why am I getting a notification for a RAC meeting? They said, our RAC is not in place. I said, then why am I getting a notification for the
BLM
Southern
Oregon Forest Service?
BLM.
Right.
Why am I getting a notification from the national office that there's a RAC in Southern Oregon coming up? And they're like, I don't know. So I called the phone number on the notification, and I got the person in Secretary Zinke's office who sent out the notification. And he's, you know, it's one of those things. But he's going to be at that meeting and works directly for Zinke. And so, again, we have the opportunity, and I think we do need a dialogue about that. What specifically is the message that we want sent to White House executives? This isn't legislators. This is White House executives. And saying this is what we need. And one is we want the ONC Act maintained and upheld.
But and why, I think I want an answer as to why is it being ignored. I don't care who petitions against the ONC Act, the environmentalists and all the other stuff. I don't care. How can they do that? I can't petition to carve out the fishing dock down here at Schroeder Park, carve that out of the ADA. I can't carve that out. How do you carve out the element of harvest and timber management out of the ONC Act? Yeah. You just don't do that. It just boggles my mind. It's a congressional act. It's not an Oregon administrative rule.
Yeah, it's administrative interpretation that the provisions within the act call for more than just the minimum harvest.
Right.
So when you read it, it says other provisions, but it doesn't. That the whole premise of the lawsuit is to clarify, you can do it all, but you have to achieve the minimum. The whole premise of the act in the first place, by everybody's interpretation, leading up to it from the Chamberlain-Ferris Act in 1916, there wasn't any expectation of multiple use within this. This is a dominant use act. It's just an administrative interpretation that it's bigger than that, and that those other provisions of law supersede the element of minimum harvest of 500 million board feet.
Well, I would
like, not our interpretation.
I would like to, and I think the time is right to do this. I would like to say, okay, when the environmentalists came in and said, we need to preserve this for my children and grandchildren. What are you preserving? You're preserving the product of the timber industry for the last 100 years. You saw such beauty in the fact that we were here and the product. You wanted to preserve it, which would have meant keep going like you're doing and preserve it. And nope, we didn't. We said, no, we'll take your, we listened to them and said, we're going to shut off all logging because that we think we want to not only preserve it, we're going to make it better. It was the intent for the children and the grandchildren and the grandchildren's grandchildren. So 40 years later, after doing it your way, we no longer have the habitat for the spotted owl because it is perished in fire. We no longer take pictures of the Calmeopsis when it was designed to be the Calmeopsis of what it was beautiful. Then. Mm-hmm. And it was beautiful. And now
yeah,
look at
barren.
It. Take pictures now. Just say, we did what you said for the last 40 years. We've done it your way for 40 years. This is the result of 40 years. And it's not ours. We've always wanted to put those fires out. And we've never been able to. This is your policy. Now here's what you have left. Where are your grandchildren? And I would make, I'd get on 60 Minutes would just be an ideal spot for something like, because it would go nationwide. This is what the environmental, this is what that policy reaped. What benefit did we reap in Southern Oregon? In doing what we wanted to preserve it for you, because this is our way of life. We don't want to burn it down, and now look what we have. And that would be a 60-minute subject segment on that would just do volumes on the East Coast as to what did you want. even Crater Lake, they've had wildfires. I can go up between here and Bend, and you see, you get those full thickets, and they're burned clear out. That's not healthy. Not healthy at all. And that's right next to the park and into the park. So that, I think that's where you, this is the timing is right for something like that.
I don't have any objection to you going, Commissioner Morgan. I think you want to be really careful when you're advocating, talking about ONC. There's the resource management plan that's in litigation right now. And
so don't go there because of the litigation?
No, it's not the fact, but you don't want the administration pulling the resource management plan. If that happens, you will no longer be in office if you orchestrated that. You probably do not pass go, and you'd be the most unpopular person ever.
No.
And I don't think you have that kind of influence, but you don't want to construe that we're advocating for that, because we want this opportunity at, you know, the bullseye, which we see the resource management plan falling so utterly short of what our expectation and what the ONC Act calls for. And I don't think you could do that even if you tried. But you don't want it walked away that, you know, somebody out there calls Rocky or Tim and says, oh, well, there's a commissioner back here advocating for better forest management. We think we could do a new R&D. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
We know that there's a time for that, and we will be at the table, but we want Judge Leon is no longer going to be the judge, apparently, I guess. No. That's the state lawsuit. He's still there hearing this, hopefully this October. So it could be really advantageous that you're there in that time.
Well, what I saw with the Evan Wilson meeting was that what they're being told by staff about what the ONC Act is and what the ONC Act is different. And so my intent would be, with your blessing to go, that I would reach out to Rocky and say, can you guys also prep me with language as appropriate?
I think that'd be very valuable. I think that'd be Rocky really sit down with you and say, this is a no-touch area, no-go.
The only real one is that you just don't want to pull the RMP.
Okay.
Well, there's stewardship conversations. The association has the trajectory of saying that they are opposed to stewardship unless there's a shared receipt component. I think they're missing it. There will never be a shared receipt component to stewardship projects. It's not the way they were designed. I would go back to the purest form and saying, you will never be able to use, you should never be able to use a stewardship tool on matrix designated lands. Those are with the ones within the resource management plan that are called for green tree commercial timber harvests. There's a lot of LSR, late successional reserve. There's a lot of other reserves that's where stewardship should be applied. And I don't care if there's no revenue, because I was never getting it anyway.
Yeah.
That's where it
should be. But on our areas designated for harvest,
should not be.
Same as the monument shouldn't be on previously lands that were designated for
resource. ONC, unless there is a no net loss provision, like there is.
Trade this for that.
Indian lands.
But if you carve out monument status, then they could make monuments out of everything. That's what they did. Okay, we're going to have the Siskiyou National Monument. And the Siskiyou National Monument took in the coal mine at Gaski. It took in the redwoods. It took in everything.
Yeah.
And it just carves it out. And then you say, well, can't touch that. And now you've created 40 years from now, or even sooner.
Oh, nice.
Created
so the
a real
fires are obviously our number one priority.
Right.
I would say that from my standpoint, that is on my radar from the liaison for telecommunication and technology with NACO is also the FirstNet network, which is the emergency network nationwide for all first responders. And that AT&T does not provide that. They have the contract but doesn't provide it. So I probably will bring that one up.
Yeah.
It's not my highest priority. Fires are the number one priority.
And I would say that front-loading, just like we told Mr. Wilson, front-loading that fire system instead of saying, I'm going to wait until the fire is completely out of control, and then I got to call in Herman Bear Trigger and Grayback Forestry. Why don't we put Grayback Forestry and Herman Bear Trigger's crews in the woods ahead of time to assist, if needed, to assist Oregon Department of Forestry? We just let it strike, and they go, sick them.
Well, it's like the smoke jumpers. When they had the smoke jumper base, they would prep areas in the forest. Landing zones, escape routes, they
and
would
it
work the land.
Didn't matter the forest designation.
No.
They did it wherever was necessary.
They didn't care.
They absolutely prepped the land in the intent of preserving the land.
Yeah. As we told Mr. Wilson, if that chair catches on fire, I'm not going to run out here and set up the command post. I'm going to put it out.
Yeah. And, well, I trimmed a bunch of hedges this weekend. And at some point, when you trim them back, there's some spots that look kind of ugly when you've trimmed them back. But the whole thing is the health of that plant and it growing back and right there.
Yeah.
There are some times you have to do some prep work
for overall
safety. So.
No, I just...
Okay. We can move on to other matters from commissioners as well. I had one item for that I wanted to follow up with you guys when you're...
I've got one also from... Okay. Yesterday at the city-county workshop,
yeah.
I'm sorry I lost my temper, but in thinking about it, moving ahead with the Allen Creek Road project, I don't think is in the best interest of the citizens of Josephine County and the city of Grand Pass. I think it was a deal to this is the way it was presented, is the city is going to lose $251,000 in engineering if we don't go through with the project. So I think we better do a $3.4 million project, of which there's a $300,000 shortfall already. So that's got to come up with between the city and the county. Somebody's got to come up with $300,000 extra for this thing to move forward, plus the $241,000 that they've already spent. They're either going to lose $251,000 and scrap the project, or let $2.4 million go back to the Metropolitan Planning
but it won't be going.
And $930,000 goes back to the app. $950,000 goes back to the app. I would say that's the best place for it. They say, and that's the thing was we talked about the third lane. Commuter lanes on 199. Nope. ODOT says that's not a project we need to look at because there's no funding for it out to 10 to 12 years is when they want to bring that back. I disagree with that emphatically. What's the traffic count on the parkway? How does it affect your citizens? Would that curb, would that maybe stave off, give us time to redo the South Y thinking,
seriously,
rather than just band-aiding, and then get that done? But when we talk about $3.4 million to do Allen Creek Road, which includes land acquisition, bike lanes, curbs, gutters, sidewalks, storm drainage, you name it, everything involved for a mile of road or whatever it is over there, and yet to add a lane, two lanes, one on each south, inbound and outbound, it comes up at $6+ million with no land acquisition. It's all within the right of way.
So I made the suggestion that the RV Act contingency of Josephine County meet prior to the RV Act meeting to get on the same page. I don't feel like with what the city is discussing.
What they just presented is not that.
Even, you know, we're not even on the same page, let alone the other non-public sector.
Right.
So I think that would probably be the best place to start with orchestrating that conversation.
I was glad
and
to put that together.
The meeting was coming up in a week or two in October, and if you guys were, I thought at our last meeting here with the city manager, council president, and mayor, that you guys had set up a date that you were going to meet as an RV Act contingency ahead of time.
Okay.
And so if not, we got to follow up. The other piece was the letter that Rob was drafting, but...
he sent that letter.
Okay. But that was my memory of that meeting conversation.
Exactly. I think that's important that we are cohesive in this, in bringing the city and the county together.
It has to be, yes.
My challenge is that I think it's been said 100 times, but I don't think the city's heard it. You didn't need to spend $250,000.
No.
You engineered.
They heard it yesterday.
Over and over, the wrong thing.
I said it yesterday.
My compassion for your spending money that was poorly spent is, and coming to us to shore up the $300,000 delta on the current project, I'm not in favor of that.
No.
I can't support it because you weren't diligent in listening to us in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
There's half of that engineering that they didn't have to do in the first place.
They brought it to us three different times with the exact same footprint. Three times. We said, this is not what we want. Go back and do it again. And so that's why, and I said, you know, I'm curious as how much you spent on it. But I think, but I'm really, really, really concerned. And then they popped up with this with the bulb out thing all the way from Morgan Lane.
Oh, that's the piece. Have you heard that
to
one?
To B Street.
Just kind of.
And I said, when did this come about? Oh, well, we talked about it at RV Act. It isn't an act. It isn't something that we need to go before the act. But they brought it up at the act meeting.
More of an NPO thing.
It was, I'm not sure where the funding is. I think it's an ODOT
project. It's just an ODOT project.
It's an ODOT project. And I said, what's going to happen here, ladies and gentlemen, is because we wanted to pull out of the act at one time, and we're coaxed not to do that because we're going to do more projects in Josephine County.
We weren't coaxed. We were told that's not an option.
Yep. This right here, this is what's going to happen 5 years from now. Is they're going to come back and say, well, you know, we're not getting any projects in Josephine County through the act. And they'll go, oh, but we did the bulb outs for you. Oh, we did the climbing lanes for you. Oh, we did the South Y for you. Oh, we fixed that little thing out there at Fruitdale for you. And we fixed the bridge. Those are all ODOT projects. Has nothing to do. No money came from the act. None. We still don't get anything from the act. And that's concerning.
Well, it's not addressing what, you know, and this goes back to illustrating, kind of like the UGB, what are your top priorities? What is it that you want? Mm-hmm. And then when they go and they do bulb outs, they do the bridge, they do the 238 thing, it's like, wasn't even on our freaking radar that's an issue.
No.
And can you not, imagine?
You're addressing the window dressing, the potholes on the way to a road that doesn't go anywhere.
I said, I go that Midland and 6th Street all the time. I never have to stop with somebody going across 6th Street at all. I have to stop with them going up and down Midland because they use the sidewalk to get to work up at Carl's Jr. or whatever.
Sure.
But I don't have to do that on the cross street. They want to make that all cross street, bulb out, put all the tape down. And pedestrians have the right of way, and they'll be stepping out in front of everybody day in and day out. But there's no need. Who called the need? Who called ODOT and said, there is a need for these bulb outs and pedestrian traffic up north of town, all the way to B Street? Who said that? Nobody asked for that project that I know of. So why is it there? Because it's something they can keep busy with.
When you guys had your meeting with ODOT, did that even come up?
No.
I mean,
this thing was a complete surprise.
You had a meeting with George and Russ.
Right.
Not with ours.
But yesterday it was a surprise.
Who was there? So the city's presenting it?
Jason had it on his team. This is what we're going to do. These are the projects. And I, where did that come from?
How long have you been talking about
that? I looked at Valerie. I said, Valerie, I missed one meeting. One meeting. How did this happen? She goes, I told you we really needed you there. And I said, but nobody ever explained this.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? This is crazy.
Right.
And yet,
something. They're already going through with it. If they're presenting it to you, it's already done. By the time you hear about it.
It's a 1920 project. 2019 and 20. Those bulb outs. What was the big conflict out there in Merlin on the sidewalk project? Bulb outs. We don't have a pedestrian problem. We have a traffic issue on 6th and 7th Street, not a pedestrian issue on 6th and 7th Street. Why don't you just tell us we don't want cars anymore? And you'll run out of funding.
Yeah.
If we all stop driving, you're broke. End of conversation. But if people quit walking, you're still fine. It's just frustrating to me to no end. And how this thing got through. When they just going to spring it when it's already done? And there's almost no way to unwind it, I'm afraid.
Well, sit down with that RVI contingent over here.
I will.
And that's a good place to start. And coming out of that, it would be really great if we had that list of priorities. You know, the sidewalks on Fruitdale was a major, major project. But I really see that the number one, it'll be pivotal, I think, to come out of that with a letter that every RV Act person, you almost should go into the meeting with the letter that everybody can sign that says our number one, these are the top three issues for ODOT in Josephine County. It's the commuter lane, it's sidewalks on Fruitdale, maybe it's jurisdictional exchange.
My deal with Allen Creek Road is
beforehand and pretty much write that letter.
I talk and I would mind because I can reach out to Mayor Stromberg. He's really powerful in the act, and I'll go over and sit down and have tea with Mayor Stromberg and explain to him where we are and what our frustrations are, because he's really big on us working together, and he's willing to work together. And I think we can get some. I think we can get some buy-in from some of the Jackson County people on the side before we go to the meeting.
A planned meeting for, you know, the letter said we'd like to follow up on the landscaping plan, but that's with George here.
That's local.
That's local. We should have a twice a year or quarterly meeting with Art.
Art, I agree.
With Art. So let's invite him to October 10th. I'm kidding.
That's fine if you guys have that. I trust you two to handle that meeting with Art while I am in D.C.
Well, I think Dan's going to need all of the...
I think I need
back. You'll have one arm, I'll have one.
I don't know if I can get that done.
No,
this thing done by the 10th. So, but I think before the end of the year, we should really have a conversation.
The end of October.
Yeah. We don't want to wait till the end of the year.
No. Let's go end of October.
Okay.
I can do that. I'll put that together. But yesterday I was so blindsided by the time, you know, they said, well, yeah, Jason, does anybody have any questions? And I raised my hand and I said, where do I start this whole presentation?
Yep.
I said, where do I even start? Gosh, I don't even know where to begin with that mess.
I wouldn't worry too much about the Allen Creek one.
Allen Creek can't go forward without our blessing, right. Correct?
I talked to Aaron yesterday, and I said, let's treat Allen Creek. Why don't we not? And I said, I was all in favor of Allen Creek when the soccer complex was going to go out there because I saw real value
in transporting the kids
and stuff, save transportation back and forth for the kids. Allen Creek soccer complex is not going to go in the foreseeable future. End of conversation. So with that, having said that, I would say pull that project, number one. We have value. We have a reason to pull it. But at some future, he says, well, but, and I says, Aaron, if you're a Hills steer when that complex comes out, do that as a city-county project, leave the state out of it. You'll get it done for 15%. Look what Michael Black did. One of the good things that Michael Black did was redo that interchange there where the pork chop was on Redwood Avenue. Mm-hmm. He redid that intersection. It works just fine now. It wasn't $23 million alternative A. It was pennies. And I think we did that along with the first section of Redwood Avenue and revamped that whole thing. Michael did a fantastic job on that. And we did it for pennies on the dollar, and I think that's the way we should treat. Then we'll be able to design it to our liking with the jogs in it to miss the houses that are out there. Between now and 10 years from now, there may be some properties that come up for sale and the city can buy those at auction if they would like and lessen the burden out there. But I think Allen Creek Road needs to wait 10 to 12 years, and I think all of our attention should shift to the commuter lane.
I agree. So coming out with that prioritized list.
Number one.
And then, because it's not their fault if they don't know that the ball bounce is not even on our list or blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
They've never seen it. So I think that would be in our
part. Good enough. I'll set that up. Okay. Lily, you said you had another deal there.
I wanted to follow up with the wildlife trapper issue. A bunch more livestock on Lower Road taken out. So we've had Applegate area, this and over here. I reached out to Jackson County to ask what there was, and Rick Dyer sent me over their contract. So as far as they're spending $75,000 a year, they get another $28,000 in a grant from the federal government, USDA, to cover
it. Is this for a trapper?
Mm-hmm. $100,000 a year is what Jackson County gets under their Health and Human Services Department, and they contract with somebody out of Douglas County.
But I'm surprised ODF&W doesn't have a card in this deck. That's what bothers me.
They do, but they're not. Not meeting the needs.
And OSP has game enforcement is OSP. I can't, if I go shoot something out of, I get a call from Marty. He's at my door. Oregon Department of the Oregon State Police is at my door. Not the sheriff. Not the trapper. Oregon State Police, and I have been before them on a couple of occasions with some questionable people that had said I did things that I didn't do, and it wasn't the sheriff that showed up at my door.
It's probably because you did questionable things.
It was OSP, but it's enforcement of game law, and mountain lions are a game animal. and a conversation.
But we are having some citizens reach out and say,
sure,
how does the county help us? I don't know that it's the county's authority to do.
It is within our jurisdiction.
Okay.
It can with a county trapper
element. Have this element and have it don't.
But that's a pretty big price
tag. Probably at least 15, 20 years had this kind of a contract. And so I'm reluctant to get into something that's going to be, if there's a way to thread the needle to have it accomplished some other way. But like that woman, unfortunately, who got, they killed a cougar. People feel better about it, but that's probably not the cougar that did it. And the situation with, you know, the animals, you're going to go get a cougar. Is that the one who did it? Probably not.
I did call her and responded back to the lady out there. Yeah. I think that we're talking same lady.
Well, no, most recently is Ferry Road, Lower River Road. There's been over 11 animals killed out there.
Down there.
And that concern is between 5:30 and 8 p.m.
Yeah.
And so my biggest thing is I remember when I was a kid getting drugged off by a mountain lion. And that, you know, that's the concern I have. Are parents being diligent when they're sending their kids to the bus stops? Are they watching when they get them in the afternoon with the county buses taking so long? Do we have an issue that, and according to OSP or ODFW saying that we have a huge amount of cougars here, why aren't they dealing with it? Why are they not taking care of this?
This thing goes way back. When I got my first cougar tag, and it's been 40-something years ago, in the early 80s. And at that time, they had 50 tags through the whole state. You applied. If you got one tag, if you were lucky enough to get one of the 50 mountain lion tags in the state of Oregon, you need not apply again, because you know why? It was once in a lifetime gig. Look at how that has changed. And we quit hunting with dogs. And now look at it today. Now they are really, really, they have no fear. The guy that bought my business, he's fishing down by Hell's Gate. And his buddy says, hey, look over here. And they were all from here to across the street apart, maybe here to the middle of the street. And there's a mountain lion walk right down between them. Got a drink of water, looked at both of them, and walked back up into the hills. And absolutely no fear whatsoever. Now, tags are issued. I suggested that if she knew somebody, I called her on the phone, and she didn't answer, but I left a message. If she knew anybody with a cougar tag that would be willing to dispatch, that's probably her best avenue. And are they going to get the right one? Who knows?
Well, I guess.
But you can't relocate that cat.
No.
You can't pick him up and go relocate him, because he's used to mutton, and he's going to come back. They go to their food source. They go to the same bowl of milk every time.
I guess I'm just wondering. I want to make sure that I'm looking at our charter. Mm-hmm. Under the field services portion of animal control, it says these services shall include the trapping, pickup, and disposal of stray and abandoned animals. But it doesn't say anything about wildlife animals. But
no.
But all the reason why they need yellow amber lights on their trucks to be safe is they're picking up and disposing of animals. But I think that I just want us to make sure that I couldn't remember if someone was reaching out to Douglas County to see if their person could be extended.
I did, and we could contract with them. That's the logical place to go.
Do they have a county trapper in Douglas?
Mm-hmm. I think I like that versus what Jackson's doing, unless we can look at explore what the grant opportunities are. But with a quarter, it's going to be more expensive than we can.
I was only thinking that we would pay for like a halftime, and we get the quarter grant, and we shore up the quarter, so it's not a full-time trapper.
Okay.
So that was my initial, and these are also cyclical issues. It's not as though this is going to be, mm-hmm. It wasn't an issue when I was a kid. It is now, and it might not be in 5 years from
now. Exactly.
So
these things are cycles, there's no doubt about that, but
yeah.
I think you know, the cats are getting more, no fear.
Elk Lane, it's coyotes that are taking out livestock and animals.
Now, wait a minute.
No, seriously.
Calves, I've heard that there's a couple calves that might not have.
Calves, maybe.
Yeah.
And some dogs have been taken out.
Yeah.
Puppies and various things.
The challenge is that the deer population seems to have exploded, so, you know.
There the predators come.
If the predators, there's a balance there. You take out the predators, and then we've got I think we have too many deer, so not enough predators.
Let's not even talk about wolves, because I have a whole different story about wolves, but that's fine.
Okay.
We are trying to control something.
The board needs to have a strategy. If you want to move forward with something, I like the idea of people figuring out a way of dealing with it themselves rather than government coming in and solving it.
I hesitate
just, well,
to
let's,
say...
Well, let's put a program together to solve that issue. Really?
Yeah. When your neighbor's sitting there, I know half a dozen people that would be glad to go out to these folks' house and sit right there and just say, here comes a mountain lion and bust it.
Well, I can tell you, when I was camping at White Horse, there was a mountain lion right outside. I mean, coming at us when I was out at midnight. That was freaky. You know, and I just kind of stayed in my car for a little bit until I felt it was safe to get out.
That's what the lion was waiting for.
Should we reach out to OSP and get Marty in here? He's the game enforcement guy.
Well, my question is, I think the health department's actually the appropriate place, and Jackson County's model of that as well.
So? It feels outside their wheelhouse. I would
think. Sure does.
The
shelter.
Animal control.
Well, the animal shelter is under them as far as...
But animal shelters for domestic animals. It's not for the wild animals.
But we
wildlife
took farm animals and all that other kind of stuff. So I'm just saying that if the USDA and the moving of animals fell under the health department in the evacuations, so the USDA being involved with the lions and stuff, all that other kind of stuff, so my health department was involved, that was the connection, is the federal grant is USDA.
Let's look into it, but I think we have an
I'm just wondering, I mean, I can assign Mike and say, Mike, get a hold of Douglas County and see what it would take if we need to do this or what the grant availability. He's also working with the grant writer right now on a contract basis to try to bring some funding in. I'm just trying to figure out what's the right answer, unless you guys want it to stay as is.
I think we have to explore the option to make a determination one way or the other. You know, you can't just say, well, the way it is, the way it is. Well, we have to accept we explore it. And it was
if we research and come to the conclusion that the way it is the way it is, that's one thing. But to just say, not my wheelhouse, not my priority, that's wrong.
Over $100,000 contract because it's 28-something and 75-something.
That's the way Jackson County does it. And their land mass is bigger and stuff like that.
They're flush.
We're not doing the calmeopsis and that whole deal. You know, if we have 1,642 square miles and 1,000,000 acres, really what we're looking at is half of that.
I
don't mind a Babyfoot Lake and all that. I don't care. You live out in...
I can reach out to Douglas County.
And OSP. Putting those two people in the room and we talk about what are our options.
Because I think we're talking a very small area. We're not we're not getting phone calls from out in O'Brien saying... I've got a mountain lion that ate one of my goats. So take care of it.
But I don't think that the people are set up to think that that's an option.
No.
No.
I don't think they reach out to their.
And I don't think a $75,000 contract is an option.
And if their well quits, they don't get on the phone and call 911. Mike, well, I don't have any water.
I would rather have another part-time deputy or some other thing. I just don't.
No, I agree with that.
I don't see the resources.
I just wanted to make sure that we bring it up and we have to talk. I'll follow up with Mike to at least coordinate and see what our options are that could be presented to us.
Okay. Anything else?
No, sir. You had something?
No, I did. The only thing I have is Owl Creek Road.
Okay.
And...
I can't say this enough, Commissioner DeYoung. It's everything. And it's not just this, and I'm not calling you out. I'm calling out the idea that we shouldn't get stressed about things that we have absolute control over. Get spun up about fires where we don't have as much control. But Allen Creek, that's your decision.
But you know what? If you're not passionate about something, Simon, it doesn't leave this room. If you're not out there in the public actually making some common sense and just saying, whoops, that's the way it is, or whoops, that's what the state says, whoops. If nobody challenges the state, it's going to continue to stomp all over Josephine County. Yeah. And we're the ones that have the smoke. The state doesn't have the smoke.
I was
the U.S. Forest
Service. Illustrations of, I will never get excited about Allen Creek. Because all I have to do is just say no.
That's right.
Yeah.
But I will get excited and passionate about fires and all that other jazz.
Sure.
So.
That's your passion.
Well,
mine is going to be Allen Creek growing.
Mine's based on what I can and cannot control.
Yeah. And this is something we can do, is that third lane. And we're completely being ignored.
So we need to go back to the top and talk to Matthew.
Yeah.
And the chair of the OTC and say, forgive us, but this is just occurring over and over again.
Yeah. It's like to sit down and say, okay,
so
we see no change.
My strategy would be that I didn't talk about is we sit down with Art before the end of the month and say, what's going on? We have a real need here.
Yeah.
Ball Bounce is not the need.
Is not it.
Fruitdale, 238. I can see it, but it's not a high priority.
Right.
This passing thing, massive. It is not okay for 10 to 12 years. What they're waiting to do is the state funding schedule to expire, and then they'll look at it. No, that's not okay.
And while their state funding schedule is waiting for it to, yeah, they're out 10 to 12 years. I get that.
Yeah.
But the problem is while they're doing that, they continue to do other things that they like.
And they say,
not what
no
we
money.
Need, it's what something that they see is, oh, we need to do this. And he's going to tell us, well, we have to do that because of the this or that act, this ORS or whatever. Oh, hold it. We really don't care about that. This is what our priorities are. And I think,
great.
I should give you guys a heads up on a couple of things this week. First off, last week you had asked me to reach out to the state legislators as far as the AOC district meeting, and I did. None are available to make it. However, Representative Wilson's chief of staff asked if she could attend, and I said yes. So Susan extended an invitation to her. There is a second chance tour. The governor's office partnered with Dave's Killer Bread up in the Portland area. They're going to be here on Wednesday at 3:30. It's kind of a weird spot to have it, but it's over the Parkway Village. That's where the Rogue Workforce or the Job Council used to be in the parking lot. Over where Gooseberries and Sears complexes. In there's a training room, and they're going to have the meeting there. But the idea is to encourage employers to hire felons, giving them a chance to contribute back and be invested in our community and staying out of trouble by working. There's also tax write-offs for any businesses that are willing to hire felons. From the federal level, there's some tax write-offs available. So I just wanted you guys to be aware. I was asked to intro that as liaison to Rogue Workforce Partners. So I'll be there at 3:30 on Wednesday. And I think that is all I needed to let you know about this week.
Okay. Great. With anything else, we're all done. With that, we are adjourned at 11:07. Thank you.